Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fiction File podcast, where we explore the wide world of narrative entertainment, from movies to literature and everything in between. My name is Jason Boyd. I'm the editor of Fiction File, and I'm joined remotely today by managing editor Corinne Asbell. Hey, Corinne.
Hola.
¿Cómo estás? Also, somewhere else in cyberspace, we have associate editor Dalton McKay. Good day to you, Dalton.
Oh, konnichiwa. I did Ola last time, so I couldn't do it this time.
Okay. That's fair. I will prepare better next time with my languages. But thank you, so that you can throw any language at me you want and I'll say hello back. Well, Excellent. Hello to everybody in the world listening. So today we'll be poring over a single work of fiction, and after we introduce this work of art, we'll discuss what makes it enjoyable, what makes it a work of art in the first place, what makes it universally relatable, and finally, we'll talk about what it could have done better. So now that we've got the introductions, we got our format, what piece of narrative entertainment are we talking about today, Corinne?
Well, we're going to be following up on our last show with Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. It's widely considered the best of the original trilogy. It was one of the highest-grossing sequel films of all time. Empire was released on May 21st, 1980. It's produced by Lucasfilm and directed by distributed by 20th Century Fox. The screenplay was by Lawrence Kasdan and Lee Brackett, and the film was directed by Irvin Kershner. And of course, the story originated in George Lucas's mind. Other than the big three, I'm sure you don't need a refresher on the names of the stars, we also have Billy Dee Williams, Frank Oz, Kenny Baker, Anthony Daniels, and James Earl Jones.
After the rebels are brutally overpowered by the Empire on the ice planet Hoth, Luke Skywalker begins Jedi training with Yoda, while his friends are pursued by Darth Vader and a bounty hunter named Boba Fett all over the galaxy.
Very nice. Ooh, so let's go over the critical opinion for this movie, for Empire Strikes Back. So now on IMDb, and of course these numbers are subject to change. On IMDb right now, it's currently at 8.7 out of 10. Metacritic, it's 82 Metascore. Rotten Tomatoes, critics have it at 94%, and audience has it at 97%. So almost 100% there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's kind of no surprise on that one, honestly, that the audience would rate that so highly. It is, as Corinne said, one of the most beloved Star Wars. So now that we've gotten all that out of the way, let's get on to our first topic. What makes Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back enjoyable? Corinne, let's start with you.
Visually, the film just seems to be more stunning than Episode 4. They had a bigger budget, and they were able to do a lot of different special effects because they had a lot of different people. Actually, a lot of Industrial Light and Magic had actually left the company to start a different special effects company, and were working on Battlestar Galactica. It was actually something that frustrated Lucas a lot. But due to all the changes, we're able to see more sweeping visuals, you know, from the frigid tundras of the ice planet Hoth to the swamps of Dagobah to the bowels of Cloud City. I mean, as impressive as the, you know, landing area was up in the clouds in Bespin, I just thought it was a lot prettier and a lot more intricate once you were inside and you could see everything they did on the sets. I really think the filmmakers enjoyed getting to have more scenery than just inside ships and Tatooine, and it really shows.
Yeah, and there are some sunsets, and like not sunsets. Well, on Bespin, there's a few scenes where it's just it's like just the light is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Just everything's like beautiful about it. Yeah, there's some real, which the first one had some great stuff too, but really it's like they just got better film quality or something.
You know, I actually read this, and I'd have to look it up again. I'm sorry, I'm not prepared. But they actually invented a camera for Empire Strikes Back. Hmm. Okay. So maybe that's it.
All right, well,
And I was
that would make sense.
I was thinking that maybe, you know, I was thinking that maybe this one was the movie that was going to break your theory of people love sand. Because there's no sand in this movie and it's touted as the best in the Star Wars trilogy. So I was like, yeah, the mysticism is broken over sand. But then I realized that Hoth is just white and sand. I mean, it's snow, but it's basically sand. You know, it's a white desert. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's still something to it.
Well, you do have something to that because, you know, a desert is a tundra and so is Hoth, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. And when Luke rolls down that snowbank, I was thinking, oh, he might as well be rolling down like a white sandbank. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it took him back to his childhood, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure on Tatooine that was pretty much the only pastime you have as a small child is just rolling down the dunes. And moving on.
Right.
For me, it's simply the continuation of a story that I was already invested in. Like, end of New Hope, you're like, boy, you know, that ended well, but I hope there's more to it. And then, you know, 3 years later, there is. And if you think about it in today's terms, it's like waiting 3 years between episodes of Game of Thrones. You know, back when we actually were looking forward to episodes of Game of Thrones. you know, you have all the characters back. You get to see the situation get worse, to go on another adventure in this universe. And that's what really sold it for me, was that it's just more of the same.
Yeah, no, it definitely delivers on the expectations. But for me, if I'm just going to put my finger on enjoyable, I think this movie has a lot of good things going for it, but some of it's not necessarily enjoyable.
It's true.
But, you know, it's dramatic or, you know, over the top. But, like, enjoyable for me, it was Yoda. So, for me, Yoda, for one thing, regardless of what you think, Dalton, we'll get to that later. But
yeah.
Spoilers.
But to me, he makes this movie a must-watch. Now, for one, because it's funny to me. I think it's like one of the most lighthearted parts of the movie, which it kind of needed something.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves a training montage, just like they love sand. In fact, training montages and sand, I mean, Remo Williams, if you've seen that movie, those are the best. But I digress. Everyone loves an overly stern sensei.
Yeah.
That's Yoda, basically. And the other movies, the, you know, prequels and the sequels, to me, kind of ruined it because, and I mean, you can't blame them for not recreating Yoda, but they kind of ruined the streak by not having explosive scene stealing new character in that second film. Because to me, that's what really takes the first trilogy. And it makes it so that it pushes it through that trilogy arc because you have such a dynamic game changer as Yoda. It's like, oh, wow. So there is the Force. We've already come to accept the Force. Now we learn that there's this little friggin' green guy who can, like, make things fly. You know, it's like, whoa, okay. Well, that's, huh. And now he's going to teach Luke how to do it, you know? So Luke's going to be even more powerful. And like, wow, okay. So it changes the whole dynamic of it.
Yeah.
And it adds so much creative energy to that story that just kind of, I don't know, to me, I think that's the thing that makes it pick up speed. As soon as he goes off, because, and I'll get to my love-hate relationship with Hoth, but as soon as Luke goes off to Dagobah, it feels like the movie was slow to begin with and then suddenly picked up as soon as he, like, leaves for Dagobah. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, my final points touch more on this subject later, but basically the whole Dagobah scene and the exposition of the Force and the revelation of the Force is, you know, the crossing of the threshold into the secret world, which is a trope in literary fiction, which everyone loves.
He meets the mentor, the master, and that's kind of part of it too. I mean,
mentor too.
I guess. I mean, you already had Obi-Wan, but to me, Obi-Wan was almost like a Sherpa. He was just kind of an introduction to it. It's like he got him to the mountain, but he was going to the mountain to see the Dalai Lama, which was Yoda.
Yeah,
Obi-Wan was kind of like a stopgap.
Yeah. Obi-Wan was the call to action, and then Yoda is the actual master right. in the hero's journey. But we'll get to that anyway.
So let's talk about our next topic. What makes Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back a work of art? And I'll start. Corinne, you already touched upon it, really. It's the visuals. Because I think there's a lot of things that's got twists, drama, action, so on. But what sets it apart is art specifically is the visuals. It looks like visual art. I mean, it's so crispy and it's clean. It's moody and textured. It just feels like Star Wars to me in a way that A New Hope didn't. And it gets carried forth in Return of the Jedi. To me, there's just something about that super baked-in feel that everything has to it. Just from a crispness standpoint and the colors. And there's just something about that quality that, like, it looks... It doesn't look like every other film, and it looks really cinematic at the same time. So to me, that's it set it up so that you could have all these crazy locales, but it still look believable, even on Ice Planet Hoth.
Obviously, I agree with that about the visuals.
Yeah. Corinne, let's see. What did you think of what did you think makes Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back a work of art?
Well, I'm pretty sure this is going to make me sound like a broken record because I still think it's the characters of the story. I mean, I was reading about an interview that the director, Irvin Kershner, did. He said he wasn't really interested in movies with a lot of special effects. George Lucas actually had to convince him to work on this movie. And once he was on board, though, he said he really pushed through to make the film more about characterization than it was about the effects. Said he spent several months trying to humanize the characters. And I think it really shows compared to A New Hope. I love seeing Luke's arc in Empire. He was this whiny little farm boy in A New Hope, and now we see him as a leader. He's taking charge in the fight on Hoth. And then we see him going to Dagobah to learn about the Jedi ways. And then even though being a Jedi is important to him and following in his father's footsteps, which he doesn't realize that's a bad idea at the time, he's quick to drop it just to go save his friends. I really think it's Empire where we realize that this is Luke's story, period. I mean, that's it. It is his story. I mean, it's not the rebellion. It's not about Han and Leia or anyone else. Then, of course, there's also the romance between Han and Leia. As you might not be aware of, I'm a bit of a Han Solo fangirl. So I really just enjoyed seeing him able to open up, you know, with the banter. I mean, you gotta look at it. It's got some of the best one-liners in the film. I mean, everyone knows that Han is a stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder, even if they don't know what it's from. And then, like Jason was saying earlier, I just really loved Yoda in the film. He kept a great balance between the comic relief and the wise teacher kind of trope that's going on. It just, above anything else, you could just pick just about any character that, you know, had more than a couple lines. And you could see a large difference between them and the first movie. And just really, like, they built on that and just really just shines through the characterization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's broken record because it's the case. You know, the best works of art have the best characters. Best works of narrative art is really all about character. Mm-hmm. So, well put. Yeah.
And a lot of times that gets lost when you're doing movies because they focus on the special effects and the visuals and, you know, the plot even. So I like that they took time to develop the characters and their relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, that could have been easy to do with a movie like this, but you're right. That kind of intention to focus on the characters really is what hones it in. Let's see. Dalton, what would you say is what makes Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back a work of art?
Well, Empire is absolutely the closest thing that we get in the Star Wars universe to a Shakespearean drama. It's hero's journey meets modern tragedy, and we get to see it unfold across this wide spectrum of emotions and character moments. It's about demons from the past that finally catch up with the heroes, and by the end of the film, you're left wondering how they could possibly fix what's been broken, or indeed, if it can be fixed at all. It's the crossing of the threshold. Now that Luke knows that his enemy is his family, once you know something, you can't unknow it. So it's that's the burden of knowledge playing out right there, and it's used beautifully to end this movie on a down note that we don't know if it's going to get picked back up in the next chapter. The best thing that I can say about that is that it leaves it wide open for the sequel. Unlike New Hope, where it's like, well, we could be done with this if we wanted to. There's such a finality to A New Hope's ending that we don't get with Empire. Empire's like, oh no, we'll be back.
But
well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that George Lucas honestly thought Star Wars was going to tank. A lot of people thought Star Wars was going to tank. So, I mean, that's, I guess, true. He proved them wrong. And then Empire Strikes Back, he left them no choice but to have a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they kind of, I'm pretty sure at that point, they were kind of like just geared up for another two movies, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it was such a smash hit and, you know, winning the award and everything. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Dalton, let's stick with you, but let's move to our next topic. Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. What makes it universally relatable?
Well, this is a movie about climbing out of pits. Sometimes literally, and as in the case of Han Solo flying the Millennium Falcon out of the meteorite pit. That ends up being a living being, a la Dune, giant sandworm. But sometimes figuratively, without an abundance of knowledge, Luke seeks out training to harness his powers like that he's developing. And without an abundance of power, Han and Leia seek allies to keep themselves out of the hands of the Empire. The entire movie is an uphill battle. It's a struggle to continue forward, and it relates to the struggles that we face every day, the uphill battles to stay afloat, bills and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, good point. It is, it's like, the only thing that's missing is Luke struggling to get a girlfriend.
Laughs nervously.
I have a fun fact about that, if you're curious.
What's that? Did he have a girlfriend in the first draft?
No. In Empire Strikes Back, Leia wasn't supposed to be a sister yet. Actually, there was.
Well, actually.
You mean in A New Hope?
No.
A New Hope.
Empire, she wasn't supposed to be a sister yet. George Lucas actually wanted to do another trilogy where Luke goes off to find his lost sister. Leia just shuts him down because she's in love with Han.
Oh.
In the original. So.
Oh my gosh, really? Okay, so yeah. There is another who's not Luke. Referring to Leia.
Yeah, not at the time. But the reason why they made Leia his sister because George was literally like, nah, I don't want to do that after all. So actually, Luke was struggling to find a girlfriend in this one.
Yeah, I think it wasn't until actually most of the way through Jedi that they decided to make the sister thing happen. Because I think that there's deleted footage, even in Jedi, Return of the Jedi, where Luke and Leia share kisses some more.
Well, you know, they could have kept it in. It
worked for Game of Thrones.
It would have been...
Oh, man. No.
This would have been acceptable.
No, it wouldn't have. Like, Disney doesn't like kissing in the first place.
No,
No kissing. No sexual references. No lovey-doveyness. Lovey-doveyness is fine, but, like, no physical affection allowed. No PDA.
Oh, but that's fine. This was 20th Century Fox and Lucasfilm. They could
I'm saying if it was made today, there would be no PDA. Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that.
Well, let's just be thankful that we got ourselves some sweet, sweet PDA.
Oh, yeah.
Because we'll never have to give that baby back. So let's see. I think, I guess it's my turn. What makes Empire Strikes Back universally relatable? I think what really does it to me is torn allegiances. So you see this, like, really with Luke. But then you also have Lando kind of having like, is he a double crosser? But he's not a double crosser. Which one, what's he going to do? But Luke, you know, he's training and then he's like, ah, I got to go. And Yoda's like, yeah, you can't go because that will be bad for you. But Luke's got to decide whether he's going to do it or not. Hmm. So it's like his responsibilities to his friends or his responsibilities to like something more than himself.
Uh-huh.
And so he has to choose between that. And then at the end, he finds out, you know, this guy is his dad. And so he's kind of like, well, now I really don't know what to do, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's all about, like, you know, kind of being torn between two different things. You're tearing us apart, Mom and Dad. It's a lot of that kind of stuff.
You're tearing me apart, Vader.
Thank you for that, Dalton. I was hoping you would come in with that.
Exactly. Yes, very good. I think Tommy Wiseau should try a remake of Star Wars.
I really think he should make a fantasy film for his next film. Like I want to see a Tommy Wiseau fantasy. Huh?
Wasn't that what the last film was supposed to be? I don't even know the name of it.
No, like
I don't even remember anything about it.
His next movie is gonna be about sharks. Anyway, so that's gonna be fun.
The emerging shark market.
The emerging shark market.
Hey, Shark Week's a thing for a reason.
But yeah, I think it's just the torn allegiances. Because to me, that's Empire is really the dark night of the soul of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, what makes it even more so is that there is a moral conundrum in the center of it. So it's not just like, well, yeah, it sucks that Han got put in carbonite. It's like, it's not just that everything sucks, but it's like, oh man, I got hard choices and both are kind of bad. Mm-hmm. Like I'm kind of screwed either way. So that just kind of ups that ante with that. But let's see, Kareem, what do you think makes this movie, Empire Strikes Back, universally relatable?
Well, to me, it's the movie itself. Nothing goes right. Everything's broken. The hyperdrive is broken on the Falcon. It's too cold for Han to take a speeder to go look for Luke on Hoth. Luke crash lands in the swamps on Dagobah because he can't see and his scopes aren't working. C-3PO gets dismantled. Lando sets a trap. Han gets stuck in carbonite hibernation, and Luke loses a hand and finds out about Dad Vader. If you think about it, it's the only movie in the original trilogy where the Rebel Alliance loses every fight. It almost makes you want to lose all hope. And I know we've all had days or even weeks or months like that. And I think that just, you can relate to it because you can see they're still struggling. They're fighting for something better and they're having all these setbacks, but they don't give up.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
It almost makes you want a new hope.
Another hope. I mean,
a second hope.
I really think that Rian Johnson could have benefited from a second, third, fourth, fifth rewatch of Empire to understand that when things go wrong in this series, it's I don't know where I'm going with the thought. Hang on.
I'll fight you on over the Last Jedi.
Well, basically, it's like they go on this mission in Last Jedi, and they're betrayed just like Lando betrays Han and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's like they're trying to draw a parallel there that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. For the characters in that particular setting. So I get that they were trying to do something there, to homage Empire, but Empire did it way better.
I can't argue with that.
I think it's a lot because there was already a background. There was already a reason to trust Lando, in such a sense. There was no reason to trust that random guy that they broke out of jail. Del Toro's character. There was no reason to trust him whatsoever. Okay. Yeah.
It was desperation that made them trust DJ. And yeah, that was a dumb move. But I mean, honestly, the whole Canto Blight scene was just dumb and not needed.
I think the whole let's just keep running. But no, we shouldn't keep running. But yeah, we'll just keep running. Like, that was just such a weird, who cares? It was just, it made me just go, you know, I hope they run out of gas and I hope they just like get gobbled up. I don't care anymore. But
I mean, that's another podcast.
That's yes, exactly. Yeah. The one where we hate on films.
Oh, yes.
No,
but,
no.
Yes, I can't wait to bitch.
The sequel trilogy. Fight me.
All right. Well,
I will fight you on that. We'll have a we'll have a battle royale episode somewhere.
I think maybe I need a few decades to let the sequel trilogy seep in, and then maybe I can accept it a little better.
I don't whatsoever.
Well, Dalton remains bitter. Let's move on with the next topic for the good trilogy. What could Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back have done better, Kareem?
I'm going to kind of have to take a cop-out answer on this. I really can't think of much that could be done to make it better. It's visually stunning. It's got beautiful cinematography, some of the best dialogue in any Star Wars movie. And I think it's one of the most realistic arcs for a space opera, sci-fi, fantasy movie. I mean, the good guys don't always win, but they don't give up. I mean, I thought about this long and hard, and I can't think of anything that I would add or change that would have made a difference. Like, even the little edits George Lucas did when he re-released the movie didn't bother me that much.
It didn't hurt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, that's high praise. Dalton, what do you think could they have done to get that extra 3% on Rotten Tomatoes for the audience score?
All right. Well, I'm cracking my knuckles over here because I know we're about to fight
Let's do it.
Ding, ding. All right. So honestly, my biggest problem with The Empire Strike Back was Yoda.
Okay.
Wow, so literal Yoda comes to us as a literal Muppet. He's acting a fool. He's going through Luke's stuff, and we all realize what was going on. Like, he was trying to deceive Luke in an attempt to reveal his character to the audience. But honestly, there was no reason whatsoever for him to do that, other than the fact that it was supposed to be fulfilling some sort of trope. Some people use the argument that, oh, he was on Dagobah too long. He's gone a little crazy. It's like, but it doesn't really hold up, because number one, we know that Yoda isn't cut off from the Force, because he's mm-hmm. talking to the ghost of Obi-Wan. Like, he could be up in Force Ghost Land with all of the past Jedi and talking with mm-hmm. them. Like, he wasn't alone. Second, it doesn't hold water because he flips it off like a switch. He's not crazy. He knows exactly mm-hmm. what he's doing. But when Luke is on Dagobah, the first thing that Yoda does is try to deceive him. Mm-hmm. And it's really not warranted, because even if Yoda had told the truth, if Yoda had gone up to Luke and said, "Oh, you're looking for Yoda. I am he," Luke would have had the exact same reaction. Like, Luke would have been like, "No, you're not even this person." Like, they could have even worked a biblical reference in there. Like, Yoda could have done all this stuff. Like, he could have told Luke the truth. He could have followed Luke around, like, watching him and saying, "Hey, I could help you with that." And then Luke, like, could deny him, like, three times or whatever before Yoda just pulls the X-Wing up out of the swamp. And then Luke would have seen, like, "Oh, yeah, totally. You're Yoda, and I feel like a jerk." And there would have been that same moment where Luke feels like an asshole, where Luke feels like a jerk, and finally recognizes Yoda. To me, this is just one of those things that takes it out of character. The problem beyond this is that the prequels are a thing. And Yoda is completely out of character in this movie now, because we get to see his true self later on. It's a problem with the sequels, because they try to shove this nutty Yoda back in our face as a throwback, and it falls flat because we as an audience have now learned better. There's little justification for this, for Yoda's characterization here. And I think that there could have been a stronger bonding moment between Luke and Yoda if Yoda had just told the truth and let Luke get enough rope to hang himself with in that regard.
Yeah.
Mm, yes. Well, here comes justification.
Okay.
Kapow! Here
you go. All right.
So I'm going to have to fight you, Dalton, which sucks because I don't like getting beaten up. But to me, Yoda is supposed to be a kook. Okay, so he's supposed to be a kook at first, because he's basically calling back to the kung fu masters of, like, the old black and white kung fu movies that Lucas is, like, a fan of. Mm-hmm. And it's not, that doesn't make it better per se, but it's supposed to be kind of like, oh, he's like a drunken master or something, you know? And there's that, but then also there is, I kind of like the fact that a Jedi is not necessarily a squeaky clean person. That he can lie and deceive in order to test somebody. Because Yoda does that. Yoda, like, proves that, like, I mean, and by the way, Yoda and the freaking masters in the council, like, lie to everybody. They're such, like, little, you know.
That is true.
I'm protecting you for your own good kind of guys, you know. But, like, he's lying for a good cause, which still makes it okay. And, I mean, it is morally ambiguous. it's morally ambiguous, but the idea is that I think the real idea is that like Jedis aren't supposed to be saintly. They're just supposed to have the best intentions. And there's kind of like, you know, we think the light side of the Force means you're supposed to be like a white knight person, but like not necessarily. But anyway, I like that. And I like the callback to the old master stuff, because then later he is kooky. He is kind of crazy later, because, you know, he's like, oh, ho, 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 yeah, well, you know, yeah, ooh, oh, yeah, you did that. Like, he still acts like it a little bit. So it's not a huge stretch at first. I think he has gone a little crazy on Dagobah for being there for so long. But I think he is obviously playing it up. So I don't mind it at all. And I think, in fact, it's kind of funny. And I think as a prequel comparison, I think you don't see Yoda for the first A New Hope. And you're like, well, where's Yoda? What's up with Yoda? Why is Yoda not here? And then you see this character, oh, I'm going to go see Yoda. And then Yoda's like, not Yoda. And it confuses and tricks you. And they're like, oh, no, he is Yoda. Well, there you go. There's my boy. Like, to me, that just works in a different way.
I do kind of just want to, real quick, I know you're going to move on, but I do kind of agree that the reason why he did act so crazy is a way to test Luke.
Yes.
But I also want to add on to one of Dalton's points where he talked about, obviously, Yoda's not so isolated on Dagobah. Because he's talking to Obi-Wan. He had to clearly have been talking to Obi-Wan before Luke even got there. Because, you know, you see the scene where in Yoda's house and, you know, Luke's losing it. And Yoda just, I can't teach him. This boy has no patience. So he obviously knew what was going on beforehand. So
right. But he's worried that Luke is going to be like Anakin.
No. I know. But I was just agreeing with Dalton on he's not isolated, and that's not why he's acting
right. He seems to be coming from a mile away.
I'm just saying it was a test. Was it a weird test? Yes. And also, as to the point about the prequels are garbage and they don't count, so don't worry about Yoda in them.
Okay, fair enough. But to make the point of what I actually think could have been better, and I mean, it's not really like it could have been. I don't have like a way to fix it, so maybe I shouldn't even mention it. But it might be an unpopular opinion, but I think Hoth is the weak part of the movie. And I can't put my finger exactly on why, and maybe it's because Americans don't love snow as much as they love sand, even though, as we learned earlier, you know, it is the second cousin of sand, but still, it's not quite sand. Also, I don't know, the whole thing with Luke being out in the snow and Han having to go get him, and then they cut open the Tauntaun, that's gross. And it was just kind of like, guys, it's like an episode of Bear Grylls or something. And
well,
it just pales in comparison to the to the galaxy trotting quest that they need to go on.
Did you know that? So, the Tauntaun thing was actually inspired by a Native American who hid inside of a bear to survive the elements.
Oh,
great. I'm glad Lucas could steal from reality as well as fiction.
I know.
I mean, the Tauntaun scene is now iconic. Like, there's no denying that.
Right.
I do see what you're saying about Hoth. I mean, it's the first... Gosh, that I think it's because the scene drags so long. It's like the first third of the entire movie that we're on Hoth.
Exactly. And there's, it's like Han's like, where's Luke? Well, I don't know where Luke is. He went out just a minute ago, and then we see Luke and he's out there and they're like, well, but where's Luke? I gotta go get Luke. It's like, just okay. Get the fucking guy. I'm sorry, excuse me.
Go get him. Just go get him.
Your
Harrison
Ford voice is terrible.
But
sounds like Lucas. Yeah,
I think a lot of it has to do also with the lack of scenery. I mean, and that was probably intentional, just so they could shoot the same like 5 cubic meters of Antarctica or wherever, and
Norway,
and Norway, and get away with it. But you know, it's there's not a lot to look at. It drags on for a long time. It's pretty bleak. I do think that it was probably meant to slowly ease you back into the universe after being away for like 3 years. So, I mean, that could be one reason why that happened and dragged on for so long.
I guess it's just, we went from, man, this kid just blew up the friggin' Death Star. Where's Luke? It's cold out there. It's just too completely different.
You know? Well, no, if you think about it, like, Luke, the scene mostly exists to break up Luke from Leia and Han, because otherwise there would have been no reason for them to go their separate ways. Because if he hadn't been delirious and half dead, he wouldn't have been hearing Obi-Wan's voice, because he hadn't opened himself up that much. But also, it does, I think, focus a little bit on Luke's force sensitivity and his powers, because, like, he sees that what he thinks is just a meteorite go down, but he's automatically like, oh, I need to check that out. And it's Empire Probe Droid. So, I mean, it is slow. It does drag on, but it did have some good plot devices to move the story forward, in my opinion.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. Definitely. I mean, there's a, thank God there's a few reasons why they did it. I just know that, I don't know, if it wasn't for that, the battle with the, you know, the AT-ATs is really what makes that worth it. And it was pretty good.
Yes. So
let's move on and wrap it up. Let's talk about our final thoughts about Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. So I'll keep the ball on this one. You know, I think really the final thought, obviously it's talked about how great it is, but it's not often that you get a sequel that's better than the original.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a better movie than A New Hope. But yet it doesn't even properly end. I mean, the cliffhanger is neat, but it's kind of cheap in retrospect. But still, even with the feeling of being cheated somewhat, it makes for the best of the Star Wars. Like, it still feels like a complete movie.
Well, if we didn't have that... Sorry.
No, go ahead, Ben.
I say, well, if we didn't have that cliffhanger, we never would have the fever dreams of Han Solo that brought us Indiana Jones.
Exactly.
True.
No, it's totally worth it, and it's good that it happened, and that's honestly where entertainment was headed. Mm-hmm. It's just, things were... I mean, back then, a sequel was usually, like, really bad. And... the fact that they were like, yeah, and then we'll end it on a cliffhanger. I mean, they took some chances, honestly, with like one of the biggest movies of all time to follow it up with this pageantry. But, you know, clearly to me, the best movie of all the Star Wars. It's just a great, great one. But yeah, let's move on to Kareem. What do you think? Final thoughts, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back has got to be my favorite Star Wars movie of all time. And I'm including all the trilogies. I mean, the entire Skywalker saga, the supplemental movies, and that kind of stuff. Empire is probably my favorite. I mean, and I just love it. Like I said, I couldn't even discuss anything about what could be better because I'm so biased against the movie, I guess. I mean, and then
you get one of those.
I mean, George Lucas actually had very little to do with this movie. I mean, he didn't have a lot to do with direction because, you know, a new director, he stepped back. He didn't have anything to do with the screenplay. It was just basically his story. And I think it really shows, and maybe that was a good thing. I mean, because, you know, the less control Lucas has, maybe a better Star Wars film? Prequels?
I mean, you look at Lucas and his ideas are solid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the Indiana execution. Jones, you know, Indiana Jones, and just, yeah, like, he's always got good ideas. And, but yeah, the execution, I don't think he understands humans.
Well, yeah, you don't learn that in a pod.
Right.
Wow.
What do you mean you bring up Indiana Jones? I mean, Lawrence Kasdan was the screenwriter on that one too. So I think it's just, it's like, I think it's actually Dalton talked about this in our last episode about how a lot of people had to work with George Lucas to make it better. You know, they had his wife, Marcia Lucas, they had other people, script doctors, and they kind of had to talk him down off that ledge. And it's like you said, he does great. He's got wonderful ideas, bad execution. He needs to accept help.
Yeah, I do want to say Lawrence Kasdan, good old Larry Kasdan.
Genius.
He's one of the best screenwriters of all time for this stuff, if nothing else. But yeah, he's really something else. Let's see. Dalton, what would you say is your final thoughts about Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back?
The Empire Strikes Back is the place where our heroes step over the threshold into a new world. A New Hope set up the world as a place of knowns, of good and evil, Empire and Rebellion, Jedi and Sith. After Empire, however, so much becomes unknown. It is the loss of innocence is complete, and the galaxy will never be the same afterwards. You have the Force becoming a known entity, like in A New Hope, the Force was something talked about, something hinted at. We don't really see much of it beyond Vader's slight manipulation to like crush people. But in Empire, we find out, you know, it's something that you can be trained in. It's something that you can touch it. You can feel it. It can go through you. It binds everything together. It becomes a known, and once that happens, it feels like there's so much more that's possible. And you know, it's the secret world. So there's, you know, it's that literary device. It's the same one. It's in Harry Potter. It's in, I'm drawing a blank on examples of the secret world, but it's in a lot of fiction where our hero starts off as someone who believes that they know everything that there is to know about reality. And then someone comes along, in this case, it's Yoda, who, yeah, the Matrix. Exactly. It's a good one. Someone comes along and completely changes everything that they know. And then once they know what they didn't know, they can no longer unknow. And that's what this movie is.
I don't think I'll ever know what I'm not supposed to know and unknow. That was very deep, Dalton. I'm 15 miles deep.
I'm going to recover. I always like that we can count on Dalton to come up with like the deep literary analysis of the movie.
Yeah, he's really hard too. So
He's always busting out the tropes and the loss of innocence, hero's journey, stuff like that. So I'm glad we can count on Dalton.
I always got to bring my A game with this group because I'm like, I can't let them show me up.
Right.
I gotta do it.
So,
it's only because you guys are so good that that I have to try so hard.
Oh, stop. Okay. That was so nice. Well, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Bluetooth.
So now that we've kind of wrapped it up and I think we got all of our thoughts out, where can we find this streaming, Kareem?
Well, the House of Mouse has all the Star Wars movies and TV shows available as part of your Disney Plus subscription. You can also buy the movie digitally at your favorite movie place like Vudu, Apple TV, or Google Play. Oh, as an alternative, you can always go to fictionfile.com and click on the Amazon banner to buy your copy through amazon.com. It's a great way to help support us so we can keep bringing you the content you've grown to love, and it doesn't cost you a thing.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, now, Corrine, if I want to find you after this is over and become your best friend, where can I find you?
You can find me on Facebook or Instagram at Nonlinear Girl, and you can find me on Twitter at Nonlinear Girl with a zero instead of the O.
Excellent. And Dalton, where can I become your number one fan?
You can look for me at Sword_Gaijin on Instagram and The Sword Gaijin Cosplay on Facebook.
Very good, very good. And I do recommend following them both. Insightful and fun. Well, thank you, Corrine. Thank you, Dalton, as always.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jason, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me where I don't want you to know. No, it's fictionfile.com actually has everybody's social on it, on the staff page. You can find mine, Dalton, Corrine's, if you don't remember this. But I'm at The Fiction File on Twitter and Sage Hazard on Instagram if you want to follow me there. Those are really the two that I use the most. But it has all the kit and caboodle because I have, like, you know, 20 accounts. I just never use them all. But yeah, you can find me on there on the staff page on fictionfile.com. So I think that makes it for another installment of the Fiction File podcast. I want to invite you to fictionfile.com for more scintillating analysis like you heard today. And don't forget to rate us if you like today's episode and subscribe to make sure you don't miss the next episode. Until then, I want to thank you for spending a little story time with us today. And for Dalton McKay and Corrine Asbell, this is Jason Boyd and the Fiction File family wishing you a happily ever after.